Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Maine Public Radio Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler. Erwin Gratz and Mal Leary are on holiday, but the groups attempting to influence next year's U.S. Senate race are definitely not.
Senator Collins hasn't held a town hall meeting in 20 years.
Susan Collins delivered more funding for diabetes and Alzheimer's research for our loved ones.
Digital and television ads have been going on for several months now, but they're increasing in frequency, and finding out who's behind these ads is growing more difficult. To help explain why, we've brought in Tony Corrado. He's a professor of government at Colby College in Waterville and one of the country's leading experts on campaign finance. Professor Corrado, thanks for coming in.
It's a pleasure to join you.
I feel like we should admit right out of the gate that campaign finance, or following the money, to use the nomenclature, is not the sexiest topic. It's sometimes dense. It's hard to get people interested. So let's deal with that straight away. Why should people care who's running these campaigns and who's funding them?
Well, one of the things we've seen in recent years is that an increasing amount of money is flowing into our elections. And as a result, it becomes increasingly important for the public to know who's behind the candidates that they're considering. Who are the interests that are funding their campaigns? Who are the interests that are getting involved in the state that are trying to influence their opinions? And how do we hold candidates accountable for the sources of support they receive in their campaigns? This has become increasingly important, particularly in recent years, where after the Citizens United decision, we now see more and more corporate money flowing into our elections. We see more and more money flowing into our elections from nonprofit corporations or groups that are often difficult to identify. And there's a concern, as we've seen recently in the impeachment hearings, about the role of foreign influence in our elections and whether or not we have foreign sources illegally funneling money into our campaigns. So this has actually become much more now than a matter of how much money is being spent, but actually a much greater concern about the sources of funding and whether voters really know who's behind the attempts to influence their opinions.
And adding to the difficulty, right, is that our campaign finance laws, especially on the federal level, are kind of vague. There's a lot of loopholes and gray area, which have been routinely exploited by political groups. And of course, the Federal Elections Commission, which is in charge of enforcing these laws, is effectively paralyzed because there's the board that makes rulings on enforcement actions doesn't have a quorum. It can't do anything. It just seems like our current system is ripe for exploitation.
Yeah, there are always innovations in campaign finance. But at the federal level, what we've seen is a concerted effort, particularly by incumbent legislators, to essentially diminish the ability of the regulatory agencies to enforce the law. So, you know, enforcing the laws that are on the books has become a problem, even before we get into kind of new legal innovations that challenge the laws that are on the books.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, which is that at the end of the day, these laws and the enforcement agencies responsible for oversight are at the mercy of politicians who ultimately benefit from the vagueness of the laws. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
Any change in campaign finance law is going to affect the funding for the campaigns of those who are in power, and that's always a very difficult change to bring about.
Well, let's get to, I think, which is really the issue at hand in the U.S. Senate race here in Maine, which is we have independent groups that are already spending money. Some of them started as early as August. There are two different types of groups that are doing this activity. One are super PACs, which are political action committees, which can, thanks to Citizens United, spend unlimited amounts of money to influence a race. Then you have dark money groups. Explain to us what the difference is between super PACs and dark money groups.
A super PAC is, as it says, a political action committee. It's a group specifically formed to influence elections, specifically formed to advocate for candidates or against candidates. They are allowed to accept unlimited amounts of money from donors, and they are allowed to spend unlimited amounts of money in support of a candidate, so long as they do so independent of the candidate. They can't coordinate with the candidate what they raise and spend. They are required, however, to disclose their finances. Super PACs disclose how much money they spend. They disclose their contributions, as long as there's a contribution of more than $200. Dark money groups are very different. They're groups that are formed not for the purpose of influencing elections. They are specifically formed as usually social welfare organizations or public policy advocacy groups. But the important point is their principal purpose is to educate the public on policy issues, to advocate policy change, to work on legislative policy changes. And they are specifically given their tax exemption because their purpose is not to influence elections. The difference with these groups is because they're not campaign groups, they do not publicly disclose their funding. They are not required to report how much they spend. They are not required to report the sources of their donations or their sources of funding so that they are able to receive money without the public knowing where their money comes from.
What is the attraction by political organizations or donors to dark money groups? Why would they want to shield their identities, or why would they want to be in the dark?
Well, you know, that's one of the interesting things. There are plenty of vehicles available to, you know, raise and spend political money and report it to the Federal Election Commission. This has largely been embraced as a way to evade the disclosure laws and keep the public from knowing what their sources or funding are. In large part, this is because many of these organizations do not want to reveal some of the specific interests that are behind them, so that this is a place now that has become very popular for large corporate contributions. Often these groups might rely on two or three donors for all of their funding, and they will receive a $10 million gift, they'll receive a $5 million gift, and they don't want to reveal the fact that they're receiving $10 million from a particular donor, particularly where these donations are from well-known conservative donors or well-known liberal donors that might subject the group to broader public scrutiny. More and more organizations are now starting to get involved in politics in this way because it keeps them free of the type of criticism that comes with the question, where are you getting your money from?
As we mentioned earlier, there are a ton of super PAC ads and these dark money ads running in the race that features Senator Susan Collins and a yet-to-be-determined Democratic challenger. What I thought we could do here is maybe take a look at how these ads work, what they are trying to accomplish. Let's start with this ad from the group 1820 PAC. It's a super PAC, which means they have to disclose their donors. And let's see if we can compare them to a dark money ad with a similar message.
She's consistently ranked the most bipartisan senator in Washington. And that means real results for Maine. Susan Collins delivered more funding for diabetes and Alzheimer's research for our loved ones. More affordable health care.
Okay, so the 1820 PAC says Senator Collins is great, she's bipartisan, and she's raking in federal funding for diabetes and Alzheimer's research. Now there's another ad from One Nation, which is a dark money group operated by Karl Rove, a longtime GOP operative.
Diabetes is a silent killer affecting hundreds of thousands of people in Maine. As founder of the Senate Diabetes Caucus, Senator Susan Collins has led a bipartisan charge for more research and more effective, affordable...
So that's kind of weird. I mean, you have the One Nation ad is also touting Collins' work on diabetes research. Why do there need to be two groups portraying a similar message?
There's nothing that prohibits these groups from working with each other, particularly the dark money groups. So what you often see is that they kind of organize their efforts to basically be in sync with each other. So that what you will find is that you might have something as here 1820 PAC doing the first wave of advertising, giving kind of some of the general issues that want to be raised. And then we will have another group after 2 weeks come in and air an ad that highlights one of those particular issues. Then another group come in and run a third ad that highlights one of the issues initially discussed. And then they will rotate with each other. In this way, no one group is responsible for the bulk of the expense of the advertising effort. In this way, each of the groups can basically take a period of time that they're responsible for to maintain the advertising, and this helps to both stretch out the length of the advertising campaign, it increases the number of ads that they're able to run, and more importantly, it allows them to continually repeat and hammer in the various messages that they want to deliver to the electorate.
Well, that's interesting because that seems to be happening on the left side of this race, where we have progressive groups. The one that came out last week is called Majority Forward. This is a dark money organization. And here is the ad that they just went up with last week.
Senator Collins hasn't held a town hall meeting in 20 years. Yeah, 20 years. Clearly, she doesn't want to hear from Mainers asking why she voted for bills threatening our Medicare. Once, twice, 8 separate times.
That hammering is the sound of judgment, I take it. What's interesting, though, all kidding aside, is that this hit on Collins and not holding a town hall has been a message that's been perpetrated by another dark money group from the left called 16 Counties or Maine Momentum. Again, is this what you're talking about, where there are two groups essentially doing the same function? I don't know if it's an echo chamber effect. Is that another benefit, perhaps?
Yeah, part of it is the echo chamber effect. Part of it is also focusing on a particular message to get to a broader message. And, you know, let's begin by recognizing it is extraordinary the amount of advertising we're now seeing over a year before Election Day. What you see is that, you know, you basically have not independent groups focusing on their particular issue or their particular legislative concern. What you find are basically two teams. And what they're doing are highlighting basically two broad frameworks. Those progressive groups or liberal dark money groups that are opposed to Senator Collins have begun by highlighting the fact that she is out of touch with Maine. She does not seem to be as moderate as is often proclaimed. They want to focus on tying Senator Collins to Trump and to the big tax cut, and they want to tie her to corporate interests, PAC money, being out of touch with the average Mainer. On the other side, what we have is an argument that is not trying to nationalize the race, as the more progressive groups are doing. They're trying to localize the race, focus on what Senator Collins has done for Maine, so that what we're seeing is, on the one side, an attempt to try to diminish the view of Senator Collins as a moderate and as an independent voice, and try to tie her to a nationalized political climate. On the other side, highlighting the fact that Senator Collins has been a bipartisan voice and is fighting for the kind of issues, health care, taxes, job training, that Mainers care about. So that what you're seeing is basically an attempt to try to influence the view of voters as to whether Senator Collins should continue to be seen as a moderate. And we're going to see much more of this advertising, I think, in the weeks and months ahead.
What type of effects do these type of ads have on voters? I mean, is there a law of diminishing returns over time? Do people just tune them out, or do they actually have an effect?
What these ads largely hope to do is kind of set the tone for the race, or to set basic agenda for the race. What they're trying to do are highlight certain issues so that those issues will be the issues most on voters' mind, and therefore are the issues that, you know, candidates are going to need to address. And in that way, they can have some influence in the discussion that takes place in election. I think the other big issue here with these ads is what they're trying to do is not necessarily sway voters so much as to implant some negative seed of thought. Voters generally tend to remember some negative fact more than some positive impression. Mm. And therefore, the idea behind some of these ads is to essentially generate some negative fact or some negative statement that will tend to stick with voters. And that's why these negative advertisements tend to be so effective. It's the notion of a little bit of bad information can push out a lot of good information. And in many cases, that's what they're trying to do.
Professor Corrado, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
That was Colby College Professor Tony Corrado. And that's this week's Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Steve Missler. Thanks again for joining us.